Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 18 of Junk Rares. This is the Magic the Gathering podcast where we're going to be talking about what's going on in the multiverse. We're going to be talking about playing Commander and how to do that on a budget. I am one of your hosts, Jeffrey Daniel.
I'm Tyler Nichols.
So today we got a pretty good episode in store for you guys. You know, if you like really terrible magic, and hating all of your friends, this will be a good one. But we'll get to that.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe some of your friends like puzzles and figuring out how to beat you.
Yeah.
Why do you assume they're a terrible person?
I mean, you know, good wholehearted people don't like puzzles. You know.
What? What's your criteria for who should and should not like puzzles?
I had a run-in with a puzzle when I was a kid. I just don't like them.
I'm okay then.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to hear about it. If we're being completely honest.
All right, so let's jump into random commander this week.
Started off hot and fast.
Gross.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yep.
Three.
Ooh.
Two. One.
Hey, there you go.
Okay.
Bringing back the old, when we had a string of like pre-con.
Yeah.
Commanders. Yeah. Getting back to our roots here on Junk Rares.
All right, so we got Stitcher Giralf. He is 3BB for a 3/4 legendary creature, human wizard. He has an ability. 2BB, tap. Each player puts the top 3 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. Exile up to 2 creature cards put into graveyards this way. And then you put an XX blue zombie creature token into the battlefield, where X is the total power of cards exiled this way. So, pretty much, everybody mills 3, you pick 2 of those creatures, and you slap them together, and you get a big blue zombie.
Yeah. Flavorfully and mechanically, I love Giralf.
Yeah.
Way more than I like Gisa.
Yeah. That's fair.
Gisa's easily just the more powerful and gets out of hand. Because, I mean, she can sack the tokens she makes for more tokens. Like, she's just dumb. She's a giant snowball of stupid.
Yeah.
But no, like, I even just watched one of Star City Games, like, Commander deck techs. And it was a Stitcher Giralf deck. And, I mean, it's about what you'd expect. I mean, it's a little bit of blue control with just huge fatties and then, like, deck manipulation. Things like Scroll Rack, Brainstorm.
Okay.
Generally things that just allow you to put things from your hand back on top.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I mean, they would then, that way, you know, you're at least hitting one fatty of your own choosing. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, you get some help from your opponent.
Yeah.
But, it's hilarious.
Yeah, and it is, we should note that it is, you exile up to 2 creatures. So if you only hit one, you'll still get just that guy's XX.
So,
I
also have a question. I mean, okay. Maybe we can work through it together. I mean, just a rules question. I mean,
okay.
So Tuna Blue, each player puts the top 3 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard.
Okay.
Exile up to 2 creature cards put into graveyards this way. That's relevant because I can't just, like, discard things or,
correct,
like, or
correct,
if something died before, I can't choose that.
Correct.
But say I activate this once and my opponent hits 2 creatures and I take the bigger one. And then I activate that ability again. But say I just hit land.
I think,
because it was still this ability milling, can I take that other creature from the first time? Or can it only be from that set of 3 each time?
I would have to say it's from that activation. Because otherwise it would be worded exiled by Stitcher Giralf. I'm pretty sure this way.
That's fair. Like, if it worded like, oh, like, yeah, choose something exiled by Giralf.
Yeah.
That makes a little bit of sense.
So, yeah, granted, I mean, I don't know if Gatherer would have the actual ruling on that. We're not exactly...
checking it right now.
The best when it comes to this stuff. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure exile up to two creature cards, put in the graveyards this way. I feel like it would only see that activation of the ability. But, you know, we'll get the judge call. Tyler the judge.
It's actually like... big old block of text.
Okay.
Exile this way, your first to the exile.
All right. So while he's doing that, how you guys doing? You doing good on this Monday or Tuesday?
It doesn't.
Whenever.
Okay. The ruling is completely irrelevant to what my question was.
All right. Fair enough.
Because the ruling says, like, if a replacement effect would happen.
Oh.
Like something like rest in peace, something that was like, oh, mm-hmm, like if it wouldn't go to the graveyard, it'd be exiled instead.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was basically saying you can't, like, Jiminy Cricket that to be like, oh, well, it's still being exiled, so I'm still going to get my zombie. And the thing was just like, no, it never went to the graveyard.
So you can't get it.
Okay. So you do get a token, but it's a 0/0.
Okay.
And it just dies.
Oh. That's upsetting.
So, you know, rest in peace, that sweet, sweet Stitcher Giralf tech.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say if you're going to build this, probably play it safe and just go with that activation. And then if for some reason you're around a judge, you can ask them.
It's fair.
This is not Judge Cast. We don't know.
But I still, like I said, I still like this deck and him just like sewing things together.
Oh, absolutely.
Being like, here you go.
Yeah.
What is it? But it's big.
Yeah. I like that it doesn't have like the Mimeoplasm effect where like it gets the abilities of one.
Yeah.
Like this guy clearly isn't great at his job. But he's just like, okay, we'll take this dead stuff and slap it together. It won't be good.
I think he's perfectly good at his job. His job's not to replicate magic. He's just sewing big dudes together.
Mm, all right, fair enough.
They're dead. So, yeah, like, you can't harvest their magic, but we can harvest the muscle left on the body.
Mimeoplasm
does.
Mimeoplasm does.
Well, mimeoplasm is, like, using magic and, like, absorbing things. He's just got, like...
He has a T-Rex.
He has just some, like, needle and thread, and he's just like, well, this is what I made.
That's a good point. The mimeoplasm, you know, being just like a magic...
He's got, like, a staple gun, and he's just like, thunk, thunk. Well, this is what you get.
Yeah. For the tool,
you only paid two and a blue for it. It's more than you can expect.
Yeah, that's fair. For the tools given to him, Stitcher
two and a blue for like potentially like 8/8s and 9/9s still seems dece.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I vaguely wish Rooftop Storm actually did something in a Stitcher Giralf deck, just because I think that'd be really flavorful.
I mean, there's blue zombies.
Yeah, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I just wish it did something more specific to Stitcher Giralf.
Sure.
Because he's basically like Dr. Frankenstein sewing shit together. And then Rooftop Storm was a giant Frankenstein reference.
I've never
seen
Frankenstein.
You've never read or...
Read scene? I don't know what...
You've never seen any adaption of Frankenstein?
I saw I, Frankenstein the other day. It was not good.
That's the one with Aaron Eckhart?
I don't know. It was one with angels and demons.
Yeah, and Aaron Eckhart, and he's Frankenstein. He's got like the two blades.
Sure, yeah.
It was enjoyable for what it was, I thought.
Yeah, I mean it was all right, but you know, it got weird.
It's fair.
It got real weird. All right. So are we gonna?
So now that we talked about Aaron Eckhart,
so are we gonna bury this conversation of Stitcher Giralf?
Man, that's campy or generated. That doesn't even make sense.
God damn.
Don't use outdated keywords if they're not at least relevant to the conversation.
Fair. Shame on me. Shame on me.
You're the one trying to make cards, and now you're incorrectly using magic verbiage.
I will have to say I've not put the word berry on any of my cards. So we're staying strong. Not gonna hose regeneration like that.
In fact, I'm going to make up for the lack of regeneration and give every green creature a regenerate.
Well, I stop at green. Why not just every color?
I'm not sure any other color does it.
Black does it.
Tertiary.
Nope.
It's not a main black mechanic.
I mean, it'd be secondary, seeing as it's
That's what tertiary means.
I don't think it is. Tertiary is third. Whereas secondary is second, and primary is first.
I thought it meant like a subsect of something.
I don't think so. I think it has to be. I mean, I think maybe it's tertiary might get down to like after primary and secondary, if it's like the third or fourth. I don't know like what the fourth is.
I guess I've never actually looked up the specific wording or I guess definition. And in any context I've ever heard it in, like partially would also just fit.
Yeah, that's fair.
As a synonym. So maybe I just assumed.
That's fair. But yeah.
This episode's weird. We're talking about movies and grammar.
We need an actual judge in here, not like a magic judge anymore. Like, we just need someone that knows a lot of big words, because we don't. But yes, like Tyler was alluding to, I decided that I want to start designing cards. I guess I made that decision when I was like 8 years old. And I was just taking out note cards and just designing terrible, terrible magic cards. And it's
taken him 14 years to actually have any semblance of what he's doing.
Yeah. You know, in my defense, when I was 8, I was just grabbing... the main design that I had, I would grab cycles of cards that I had. Like the Spellbomb cycle or like the Seal of Blank cycle. And then I would just staple them all together and just make 5-color cards that had all the effects of all the 5 pieces.
So you basically pulled in a name as one, but instead of with 2 colors,
yeah,
with 5 colors. More and I bet it was equally as bad as a name as one is.
Probably. Yeah. I hope. I strive.
What did you call? Like, okay, so like Panic Spell Bomb. Like, what was the name of this 5-color Spell Bomb?
Spellbomb of togetherness, you know, because you brought them together. Yeah, it was for an 8-year-old. Yeah, sure.
And even like Rainbow Bomb.
Oh, that's good. That's solid.
I don't think it's any better than Bomb. Well, it's definitely better than Bomb of togetherness.
That's a good point. Usually together.
But I'm also not sure it's all that great.
No. But yeah, so I decided. I've always enjoyed the idea of designing cards, whether or not I am any good at it or have ever been any good at it. But I figure I'd give it a shot. I mean, I spend a lot of my time playing Magic and thinking about Magic and talking about Magic. I figure why not make Magic? You know? So I'm currently designing a set. There's going to be 5 mechanics. It's going to be based around the enemy color cycle.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah. So, it's been difficult getting started. Because you come up with these ideas, and you're like, oh, these are good ideas. And then as you kind of start working towards it, you realize, like, oh, these ideas are terrible. And you're not going to be able to design things around them. Like, even, like, mechanic ideas. Like, you come up with something, and you're like, oh, like, this is actually really, really good. And then you realize, like, oh, no, the rules don't support this. Or, like, oh, this is functionally impossible to have in a card game. But yeah. I think my main success would have to be I figured out how to make riggers a thing. It's just the one thing that has plagued Magic players for ages. And if you guys don't know what riggers are, go ahead, look up Steam Flogger Boss.
And then stop worrying about it.
And then do a gather search on riggers. And then just be let down. It's not a creature type that's a
Isn't it even thing? In the Gatherer rulings just on his page where it says like riggers are not currently a game mechanic or something like that?
Riggers assembling contraptions aren't. There was one creature, I think, prior to Steam Flogger Boss being a thing that was called, like, something rigger. And then they were like, oh, well, we should actually go back and oracle that to be a creature-type rigger. But he doesn't assemble anything. He has nothing to do with anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
He just...
The Moriak rigger.
Yeah.
He's a human rogue rigger.
Yeah. And in black, and he does nothing.
Whenever an artifact is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you can put a +1/+1 on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual card just says human rogue, but he's oracled to be
a rogue, a human rogue rigger.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Gross.
So yeah, assembling and contraptions aren't things that exist in Magic. But I figure for a custom set, why not make it a thing, you know?
I mean, but, I mean, if you play him together, mm-hmm. he gets +1/+0 in haste.
Yeah. Sure. Steamflogger boss, so good. Nice. But yeah, I wanted to, granted.
So what was the idea? Was that just riggers were people who put artifact contraptions together, I assume, is where they were going to go with it?
Originally, it was something that I guess couldn't exist. The original plan was going to be that it put these contraption tokens into your opponent's library, and then they shuffled them up, and then whenever they drew that card, they had to reveal it, and it had some sort of effect.
Like, that's for sure what that was going to be?
Well,
or that's just your speculation. That's what it was going to be in yours.
Yes. Okay. In actual Magic riggers, they had no idea.
They had no idea what contraptions were going to be.
Yeah. They completely made Steamflogger
boss. Riggers apparently just a race or a class type.
Yeah.
Like soldier mm-hmm. or rogue.
Yeah. When they had originally made Steamflogger boss, it was completely like, we don't have any sort of plans for assembling contraptions. They were just like, just put some words on that card and then send it to print. And we're just going to confuse Magic players. Like, they've come out and said, like, this is not a plan. This was never anything. We just wanted to throw some words that sounded cool together and then just let you guys go crazy with it.
Because it was Future State. And
yeah.
Isn't that how Planeswalkers got spoiled? Was on Tarmogoyf's flavor text back in the day?
I think
not her flavor, but his rules text?
I think so.
Because it was like, you get plus,
gets +1/+1 for each of the
card type, and it said, in the original Future set, it's like the card types are instant, mm-hmm. sorcery, land, artifact, creature, enchantment, tribal, and planeswalker. And everybody was just like, what?
Yeah.
Planeswalker? Yeah. That's not a thing.
They were originally going to have planeswalkers in Future Sight because it was supposed to be like, we might do this one day, but they weren't ready. Like, they didn't exactly know how the Planeswalkers were going to function as cards. So they were like, maybe we should hold off on this. And that's why they just randomly appeared in Lorwyn for some reason. I mean,
bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all there is to it. They were supposed to be in Future Sight as this, like, new splashy, cool card. And then it was like, oh, wait, no, we don't know how this card works yet. So going back, I decided I was not okay with riggers not being a thing. I wanted to make it a thing. So that's going to be the red-blue mechanic. Just riggers that are assembling contraptions. And the plan is they have some sort of tap effect or some sort of cost you have to pay or at the beginning of your upkeep or something that you put an assembly counter on them. And then you can remove two assembly counters and you get a 1/1 contraption. So it's similar to the Thalid mechanic, where at your upkeep, you get a spore counter, and then you can remove three to get a sapperling. And I figure the best designed mechanics are ones similar to what we've seen before. I think a lot of new designers want to come up with all these like crazy new things, and that's definitely what the first incarnation of my riggers were. I mean, putting tokens into their library that when they drew them, like, the rules don't support that on so many levels, and it's very easy for them to just cheat and not reveal it, so it got into a lot of crazy complications. So I decided to scale it back and just kind of look at it and be like, okay, this makes a lot more sense. We have seen a similar effect like this before, and this seems like a much simpler way to do it. Less complexity, more elegance. I decided the white-black mechanic, Vengeance. It's going to be on creatures and spells, and it's going to have an added bonus if a player has more life than you. I figure that was flavor. Well,
give me an example. Vengeance is it kind of like spell mastery, where like if you meet X requirement, mm-hmm. something is happening.
Yeah.
Exactly. Then there's also another subsect within it that says, like, and, like, so, okay, like, vengeance, my creature does this.
Mm-hmm.
But it also does even more of this if I'm behind in life.
Yeah, yeah. That was the idea. So it can be on creatures and spells. So, I mean, just a basic creature, you have a 2-drop 2/2 that if an opponent has more life than you, it gets +1/+1. I mean, just that sort of thing.
So is that always the stipulation, your opponent having more life than you?
Yeah. It doesn't matter how much or any amount or whatever.
That seems good just as a, like, within Black's just, like, ideology in general.
And I thought it was very interesting because you can go one of two ways with it. Black is very big on paying life for things. So being able to use your own life as a resource becomes doubly as good, because if you can put your life total below your opponent's, that now turns on all of your vengeance things. And then in white, you have certain ways. I mean, if you have a card that says, like, target player gains 4 life, another target player gets an ability, whereas, I mean, maybe sometimes you'd want to give yourself 4 life. At this point, it becomes even better now, because giving your opponent 4 life might actually be good for you. And then you also just get the bonus of getting that other effect. So, and I mean, usually in most magic sets,
it kind of feels vaguely, like, just idea, like, wanting your life total to be lower,
mm-hmm.
like, vaguely reminds me of the card Death's Shadow.
What does that do?
Death's Shadow is a 1-drop 13/13, but it gets -X/-X, where X is your life total.
Okay.
So the lower your life total is, the stronger the creature is.
That's cool.
It doesn't become anything until you're at 12.
Yeah.
So once you're at 12, it's a 1-drop 1/1. But then the progressively lower you get from 12, obviously the bigger it is for the cost of 1 mana.
That's actually really cool.
Because it's Death's Shadow. The bigger the shadow, the closer the sun is to being set. So
I like that.
It's pretty flavorful, you know.
Yeah. So that was the white, black, and red, blue mechanic. Then I have blue, green. That's going to be the unbind mechanic. That's going to be only featured on creatures, and you can pay the unbind cost and exile that creature. And then you put a number of tokens into play. So say you have a 2-drop 2/2. You can pay, you know, just like a bear. You can pay like 2 and a green and exile that bear. And then you get 2 1/1s. You just, and it's always going to be, you take the power and toughness of the creature and it gets split up evenly to the equal parts. That's definitely something, I mean, that's going to be getting around any sort of like removal and stuff. I mean, because then you can just pay the cost and exile it yourself. So it might have to be costed a certain way.
Can I play my bear and then pay that cost when he's on the battlefield, or is it exile from hand specifically?
Oh, it'd have to exile from the battlefield. Yeah, he has to be out there, and then you unbind it. So
I can't. Okay, so you have to play him as a creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then pay to unbind him.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, either I play him as a bear or pay. It's not a front hand cost that I pay and just get tokens.
No. I mean, and that's definitely, I mean, something to maybe look into. I feel like maybe that's, I feel like the fact that you'd have to play the creature first and then get the tokens is a little bit more prohibitive. Because if you want to go with the token strategy, just being able to exile straight from hand, I feel like is a lot stronger. If you just need all of those bodies right away.
That's definitely true.
So I figured it was fun. I mean, you know, you take a look at a lot of the black green stuff and it's always like undead monstrosities and like horrors and abominations. And I figured like it seemed interesting to kind of just be like, all right, well, this creature is getting split up into like it's 2 or 3 parts. And then you can have, you know, you can have like the bigger guys if you want them or the more token strategy. Red-white, it's going to be, I think, I haven't exactly come up with a name for the mechanic yet, but it's just going to be, if this creature is equipped or enchanted, it gets a bonus, or your team gets a bonus. I haven't exactly decided yet, but it's pretty much just going to be that. If he's equipped or enchanted, something happens. And then the blue-green mechanic is going to be artifact creatures. So I'm going to be bringing back the two-brid mana cost, so you can either pay two colorless or colored mana, and they're artifact creatures.
Those cards were cool. I like those cards.
Yeah, I thought they were very interesting. I mean, in draft or something like that, if you have to pick up a card that's out of your color, you can pay the overcosted colorless mana. I mean, you're not happy about it, but it's a possibility, and I think it would make everything go smoother. Sometimes you just don't hit your colors right away, and, you get stuck on one kind of mana, and you can just pay all the colorless. But I figure the green and blue kind of connection is it's like nature versus nurture, life versus artifice. So I wanted to combine the two, and I wanted to make it like artifact creatures, like creatures that have become part artifact. And their interesting mechanic is going to be their artifact creatures, but they can be equipped to other creatures and then unequipped. That's what I'm working with now. I kind of have to look into the rules and see if that's even able to be supported.
You should be the first person to bring in just like a little pie chart mm-hmm. in the mana cost symbol. Just you can pay one blue, one green, or two colorless.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, that has to get crazy. Or just split four ways. That's how you design the four color commanders that everyone's been wanting. You just have like the four brid mana cost, where it's just like white, blue, black, or green, but not red.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
sure. Not saying it's good, but
that would be. I mean, ridiculous on so many levels.
People thought it was crazy when we got hybrid mana, so you never know. Wizards, there's some tricky guys. That's what I've been working on. I figured I want to try to start working on this, get it under my belt. If Wizards ever does the Great Designer Search 3, that's definitely something that I would love to try to get into. It's a dream of mine, so I don't know if that ever, dreams very rarely come true.
I'm shooting for it to fail, because I'm pretty sure that if you get it, then you can't do a podcast.
I mean, we can do a podcast over the internet, man. There's this...
I'm just going to shoot for... I'm going to stick with the original plan of just rooting against your dreams.
Oh, okay. I mean, you could come with me. We could podcast in Seattle.
And so rooting against the dreams.
We can be sleepless podcasting in Seattle.
Rooting against your dreams. Have you even seen that movie, though?
I thought it was a show. I didn't know it was a movie. No?
Oh, dear Lord.
It seems like a show that would be on, like, TBS. A bunch of, like, middle-aged women.
Sleepless in Seattle's a Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, I feel like it... No, I feel like it'd be, like, a bunch of, like, middle-aged women that kind of, like...
It doesn't matter what you feel. You're wrong.
What happens in that movie? Is it good?
It's widely considered... I mean, it's an extremely popular romantic, like, movie. Oh. Like, it's a 110% chick flick, but...
Oh, why are they sleepless? Why don't they go to bed?
This isn't the Sleepless in Seattle podcast. I'm not about to give you a...
I think it damn well should be, if we're being honest.
Oh, no. How about not?
Okay. How about we make it the Commander's Corner podcast?
Sometimes I wonder why I podcast with you at all.
How about we make it the Stacks cast? It's not a bad...
B plus.
Sure.
B plus.
Okay, guys.
Commander's Corner. Yay! I want, like, small children cheering in the background whenever we say Commander's Corner.
I try to keep as few small children in my life as possible.
You have more nieces and nephews than I do.
I mean, true. I think it's just two. but
it's two more than me.
I mean, in my defense, I just have older siblings, whereas you just have younger siblings.
And it's way better being on top of the mountain. I'll tell you what.
All right, guys. So this week on Commander's Corner, we're bringing in Grand Arbiter Augustine IV, or four, whatever you want to call him. You know, it doesn't say the. Someone go ahead and say four. I don't care what anyone says. But he is 2 white-blue. He is a 2/3 legendary creature. Human advisor. So that's this guy's title.
He'll whisper in your ear.
I hope he does.
Just telling you some secrets. Advising you.
He has 3 abilities. White spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Blue spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Spells your opponents cast cost 1 more to cast.
So that old 2 mana swing and potentially 3.
Yeah. So
his advice to you
is to pay less.
Nah. That your opponent's playing things is dumb.
Oh, that's good advice.
You know what's dumb? When Lily plays spells.
It's true.
Let's not let her.
It's true.
Or make her pay an unreasonable amount for her 4-drop.
That's a good point. Because you might think an unreasonable amount, wouldn't it just be 1 more? Absolutely not. Because this deck is for degenerates. And she's going to have to pay 14 for that 4-drop. Because that's what this deck does. If you guys don't know anything about Legacy, we're going to tell you something about taxes. We're going to get your taxes done on this cast for you.
No. Well, we're going to make a stacks.
Sure.
And we'll let them, but I'm not building anybody's taxes for them.
If you guys want us to do your taxes for you, you can reach out to us.
I'll give them your email address. Don't you lump me in with this. I will give them your personal... I'll give them your phone number. And they can text you their tax information.
I mean, maybe it's not a good idea to send a stranger all of your tax information. That's probably how you get your social security number taken. So if you want to send that to me,
bah humbug.
Go ahead. I can't promise that you won't be in jail in a month.
Why would they be in jail?
For fraudulent charges.
No, they would come after you.
No.
For identity theft.
They won't know I took it. We'll have to delete this cast.
We've
spoken too much.
We're recording the evidence for them. They don't even have to do anything.
I'm not a very good criminal. Okay. All right. Felonies aside, let's talk about this deck. So a Grand Arbiter deck, as much fun as I poke at it for being the, you know, unfun degenerate deck, it's whatever. I mean, a lot of people see it as unfun because you're making your opponent's spells cost more and everything, and maybe they're true, but it's just another kind of deck, whereas some decks are just very aggressive and can just kill you or combo out, or it's just another kind of deck. I dislike a lot when people get upset about controlling decks. I mean, being able to play your spells is fun, but, you know, different people like different things, you know?
Oh, for sure. I like Grand Arbiter to an extent because it feels like a very old, like, I know it's tax, mm-hmm. technically,
mm-hmm.
but obviously you're supplementing your tax with counter and whatever removal you've got because, I mean, eventually people are going to be able to pay for this stuff.
Yeah.
And so you can't just let it be, oh, well, you managed to pay for it and now I let it kill me. So obviously you're running X amount of, like, answers too.
Yeah.
But when you get to that point, it becomes very, like, classic control,
mm-hmm.
in that this deck is really just going to have, and given its commander, maybe 5-6 beaters at the top of the curve.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of it. It's actually pretty simple, straightforward magic. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm going to try and get you to cast the least amount of things possible.
Mm-hmm.
Counter and or kill what I can. And then hopefully I just have enough consecutive turns that my giant flyer just kills you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to, like, be like, and deal 40 this turn, like, some aggro deck that's like, I pump all my guys, or it's not going to be, like, combo, like, well, whoop, I win. Like, granted, in those colors, you probably could put together some sort of combo, but for budget constraints, it's really just, well, going old school, like, here's, like, my Sarah Angel-type-esque thing, like, here's my big beater at the top of the curve, and it's just going to slowly get there.
Yep. And that's definitely, this deck is very much just slowly going to get there. This deck is doing nothing fast. This deck is very much just like, all right, you sit down with this deck, and if your opponents are not just scooping after they decide they don't want to be here anymore, the game is going to go long, because it's going to take you a while to finish them. Like Tyler said, there's some giant sphinxes and angels at the top of the curve, but it's going to take you a while to get there. Granted, they'll cost two less. But
still, I mean, even swing in, say, 8 in the air or something. Like, yeah. 8, 10, like...
Yeah.
If you're in a pod, that's still 4 turns per person about you have to allocate. Maybe 5, like...
Yeah.
Now, granted, you know, early game, hopefully your tax effects... Two things are going to happen. One of two things. Either, depending on what kind of tax effects you get out there...
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to get things out like your Propaganda or your Windborne Muse, and there's tax effects, because there's two types of taxes. There's the leave me alone taxes,
mm-hmm.
where it's going to cost your opponent resources to go after you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just, well, everybody's paying for everything. Like things like Talia, Glow Rider, I believe.
Yeah, Glow Rider.
Vryn Wingmate. Those, all three of those cards say non-creature spells cost one more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's going to affect you, too. Like, but those are symmetrical. Those are going to affect everyone. So there's things that are just going to make everything more expensive for everybody. And the problem there is, I think my piece of advice here is, yes, obviously you want Grand Arbiter out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Or about, like, pretty much when you get to your 4 mana, like,
you're
pretty much going to want, because he's the linchpin of your game plan. But what I will say is, playing this deck, on top of playing the long game, and, you know, having to watch, like, making sure you're countering what you need to counter, or mm-hmm. kill what you need to kill, this deck is going to benefit from you playing more so than others in a political manner. This isn't exactly like Xenagos, where it's slam a big dude, I got a big dude, who's got the least life, punch him in the head. Like, you don't have to be very political when you're swinging 2020s and bigger. Like, it's just, politics, I'm not gruel than die. Like, you do have to keep out, so that's part of the reason it's fun recommending this deck. Because, again, some people might inherently think, oh, like, I don't want to play against control or with control, but... This deck also challenges your ability to, I guess, your social aspect of the game.
Yeah.
That is Commander.
Yeah.
This deck is actually asking you to play on two fronts. Because mm-hmm. if you just play out all your stuff, and then three other people are alive, three other people are going to be like, well, we probably don't want to keep paying more for our spells, so why don't we all just kill him real quick and then have it out. Yeah. And you have to be wary of that
mm-hmm.
sitting down with a commander like this that kind of projects the tax effect, people are going to instantly be a little weary of you being there because it's going to make the game harder for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, naturally, if the biggest hindrance to them is you just playing cards and taxing them,
mm-hmm.
they're going to go after you.
Yeah.
So that being said, you have to play this deck kind of sly. It might be in your best interest to go draw go for a couple turns, not drop anything right away, and then maybe, you know, maybe play things like Propaganda or the Windborne Muse where, okay, early game, I'm really just going to kind of sit here and be like, Well, it's not in your interest to attack me.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to do that before everyone else has got resources. You know, a quick Rhystic study or a quick, like, propaganda, like I said. Mm-hmm. Things that are like, oh, well, only thing stopping you is just don't come after me. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can still continue about your plan. And, you know, it's still early. It's the first, you know, 5-6 turns of the game. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't all have that dumb spare mana that you 10 times have in Commander.
Yeah.
And so when you start to play that game and you're like, okay, like, all right, I might as well attack Lily. Because, I mean, it doesn't cost me anything to attack her. Sure. Like, and then, you know, as maybe you see one or two of your opponents, you see one of them, well, they dropped below 20 now. Mm-hmm. Or then you kind of got to use that to your advantage and be like, okay, maybe then you start laying out things like Talia or we have a bunch of cards, but
yeah, we'll just, get into just exactly strategy, what you're playing.
From a strategy point,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you start to lay down the, oh, wow, all of a sudden I can really only afford to cast one or two things, maybe only one thing a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I'm going to cast 2, 3, draw cards. Like,
yeah.
You're going to start generating this advantage where, like, I now, the reason my counters and kill spell is going to work extra well is because you can no longer outpace the amount of counters I have or the amount of control I have.
Yeah.
Because all these tax effects are limiting what you can do. So I'm forcing you to have to play into my one or two answers instead of having to have a deck full of answers so that I feel like I'm always holding. Well, why don't I just slow you all down and then just I'll have the time now to draw my answers instead of just packing so many in there I'm always have some.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, here's my big guy, hopefully a little cheaper. Well, everything else is a little more expensive for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin the slow kill.
Yep. Absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
But it's another way to play Magic, and that's why I think the deck's underappreciated, is because, you know, some people like almost that social puzzle, as I called it earlier. Like, it's a real thing. Like, having to play the politics, that's fun for some people. Some people like being able to, on top of playing Magic, I'm also having to play the game of manipulating my opponents to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I bluff counterspell? Like, do I, you know, it's a whole another level of playing that, you know, if you enjoy it, you know, it offers another challenge, and that can be fun.
Definitely. All right. So let's jump into the cards. So I,
for sure, I how think, are you taxing your opponents?
Yeah, because, you know, are you, I wish I knew more, like, legal speak, you know, are you going to not give them their 401k? Or, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Legal.
Judge!
All right.
To kick it off, the card I've already mentioned a couple times. If you're unfamiliar with it, Propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
2 and a blue. And really all it says is creatures can't attack you unless...
unless their controller pays two.
Relevant wording with this is they can attack whatever planeswalkers you have for free.
Mm-hmm.
So just to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing as we're in blue-white, I can mention it, but I'm not going to outrightly suggest it.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostly Prison does the same exact thing. It is literally the same exact card. It just costs 2 and a white. But for whatever reason, Propaganda is like $2 or less and fits the criteria for our budget podcast, where the white version of this card costs at 7.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to keep it budget, maybe you pass on the secondary effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out there for those of you who want it. Yeah.
I mean, it was printed, I mean, at least in one variant, as an uncommon. I could definitely see this being the sort of thing that someone just has in their collection somewhere, but, you know, don't realize that it's $7.
Randomly expensive.
Yeah.
Also, stick with, I guess, that effect of not being able to be attacked. We have Windborn Muse, who is a white creature mm-hmm. who has the same effect. Mm-hmm. Can't attack you unless they pay two. Mm-hmm. And then with a lot of, you'll find a lot of tax effects come in the form of enchantments. And from RTR block or set, first one, Sphere of Safety costs 5. And it says, it's similar. It also is going to make your opponents pay for attacking you. But they, instead of having to pay the flat rate of 2, they have to pay X, where X is the number of enchantments you control. Mm-hmm. So, not great if you run it out there by itself, because mm-hmm. then they only have to pay 1. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you got a couple of these taxing effects sitting on the field. All of a sudden, they have to pay 3, 4. Who knows? They got to do all... I mean, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of mana to invest to attack you per creature. Like, could you imagine having to pay 3 for each creature? And say you have both a Propaganda and a Sphere Safety out. They have to pay 4 for each creature just to attack you.
Yeah.
That's very disincentivizing. Like, it's not a great use of their mana unless it's maybe a kill shot. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Which buys you a lot of turns.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else in the realm of stopping them from attacking.
Attacking you?
Norn's Annex.
Yeah.
It's a little more of a get-around.
Yeah.
Not as effective in my playtesting, because I've played with these cards.
Mm-hmm.
Norn's Annex is an enchantment artifact, or is it just an artifact? I don't remember specifically. But it costs 2, 3 Phyrexian?
Yeah.
Phyrexian white. So you can pay 3 white, or 3 and 4 color, and 4 life. And it has, they, creatures can't attack you unless your opponents pay Phyrexian white. So they can either pay 1 white to attack you, specifically white, or they can pay 2 life. Now that's not great on its own. Because in Commander, people are normally like, yeah, I'll just pay the 2 life and swing. Because they might be swinging with something. You know, as long as they're swinging with something bigger than 2, they're still netting an advantage.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, combine that with some of the tax effects, and they're like, well, I have to pay 3 mana and 2 life.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're getting kind of like, ooh, this is right. real costly just to have to swing into him.
Yeah. And that's, I mean... And for each creature that's attacking you, like, at a certain point, they're just not going to be able to attack with their whole board. But, I mean, even then, them having to pay, if they want to spend all of their mana and, you know, 6 or 8 life to attack you, I mean, hopefully you have the blockers for it, but, I mean, eventually they'll just die. I mean, they're wasting an entire turn's worth of mana and a good portion of their life to just be swinging at you. And I really think it's the sort of thing where at a certain point they're just like, well, maybe I just won't swing at him. Like, I don't, you know, it's Commander. People have yeah. a lot of big crazy spells in their hand. They want to cast them. They don't want to have to be spending their mana just to attack.
And then, you know, that incent, and then that, right there is part of the politics then. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone else takes each other out, and it's way easier for your one big beater to kill one person than it is 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. All right, so getting into the taxation of just having to play things. One of my favorite, I think it's underestimated, Aura of Silence. It's 1 white enchantment. Artifacts and enchantment spells your opponents play cost 2 more to play. So, it's not all spells, it's not, you know, all non-creatures like some of them are, but I think we see a lot of artifacts and enchantments. I think a lot more than people realize. You know, Theros gave us all of the enchantment creatures, you know, all of the gods and everything like that. And artifacts, I mean, how many mana rocks do you see? You know, how many just big artifact creatures do you see? Them having to pay 2 more for each of those, like, it gets very prohibitive. Like, I don't know if I would want to pay 5 for a mana rock. I would. I mean, I guess if you have to, you have to. But I'm not happy about it.
If you spent five mana on your turn to cast a mana rock. Eventually, all these, like, tempos is going to equal to you being a turn or more to, like, if you're just turns ahead of your opponents, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a good position.
Mm-hmm. And then also, with that Aura of Silence, you can just sacrifice that to destroy target artifact or enchantment. So
in a pinch, removal's removal.
Yeah. I mean, if they get their...
Blowing... Know. It seems worth it to blow up, like, an Omniscience or something.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go with that. That seems worth it. I mean, other... Like Tyler said, we have Thalia and the Vryn Wingmare, Glow Rider. These are all things that say non-creature spells cost one more. You know, there's you have things like Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora that say when they cast a spell, they have to pay a certain amount of mana, otherwise you're going to draw a card. I mean, with effects like that, they don't have to pay the one more. That's fine.
But now you're generating the advantage of, okay, you casted your spell, but now I'm netting a card.
Yeah.
So either you're slowing your opponents down considerably, or you're gaining an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things that just work towards the ultimate goal of probably your opponents kind of taking each other out
yeah.
and leaving you with one person to deal with.
Definitely. I mean,
and if you can focus all your answers
mm-hmm.
at one person instead of a whole table, you're going to be way better off.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, Rhystic Study being two and a blue, I mean, unless that just gets blown up immediately, you're going to net, I mean, more than two cards off of it. So it's already better than most sorceries and instants we see that are drawing you cards.
At that CMC.
Yeah. Or you'll probably just more likely, if your Rhystic Studies are anything like Tyler's Rhystic Studies, you'll just end up drawing like 10 cards. And I'm sure it'll feel fantastic.
It does feel pretty good. Although, I never play them against you now, because there's no point. Because if it's a one-on-one game against you, you will vehemently never...
Let
me draw a card.
But still then, like...
It's tempo.
It's keeping me a turn behind. So, in a similar realm to them paying one, unless they want terrible, terrible things to happen, Spelltithe Enforcer, 3 white-white, he's a 3/3. And then whenever an opponent plays a spell, they have to sacrifice a permanent unless they pay one. So...
Seems dece.
Yeah, again, if they want to pay the one, they can.
Or they can just slowly obliterate their board and one for one themselves. I want this thing, but I have to get rid of another thing. Basically, their board state will never advance in this scenario.
Yeah.
Because... I mean, granted, they could still net lands,
mm-hmm.
and they can sack lands.
Sure.
But you won't ever see someone's board get out of control, I guess.
Yeah.
Barring, I guess, like something like Wrists, or like, there's always ways around it, but like, it'll be hard to just cast out a bunch of things because, cast got a sack, or they're paying more, which means it's going to inhibit the amount they can cast out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just generally keeping everyone in a more manageable range for you.
Mm-hmm. So going to the more off-the-beaten-path sort of taxation effects, you have Suppression Field. One and a white activated abilities cost two more. Maybe not always the most relevant, but that's going to hose certain decks. That's going to hurt certain decks. And that's just kind of what this deck wants to be doing. I mean, not all of your taxation effects are going to hit everybody, but you want all of the effects possible to hit as many people as you can. And then also, if you're one of the people that like to play to your metagame, you know, if there's the circle of friends that you like just playing with and you guys only ever play together, you can play Chill, two and a blue. Red spells cost two more.
Just... Red spells.
Yeah.
Is it red? It costs more.
Yeah. So if you have that player in your group, just go ahead, tax the hell out of them. They shouldn't be playing red anyway. That's a lily color. Red is not the color for commander. You know. Or you play Purphoros, and that's a super powerful commander. And all of his stuff will cost two more. So,
yeah.
That's fair.
You might be doing two damage to me, but that dragon fodder is going to cost you four.
Ugh. Gross.
Seems like a bad dragon fodder.
It does. That's the worst kind of dragon fodder. Okay, so... So, yes, those are all the tax effects. However, there are still things that make your opponent upset. You have the Monastery Siege, 2 and a blue, and I guess this is a good transition because it can tax them half of the time. It's the Siege from Fate Reforge. When it comes in, you choose cons or dragons. Cons, at the beginning of your draw step, you draw an additional card, and then you discard a card.
Seems fair.
Yeah. Just each turn you're sitting there looting, you can go ahead, pitch your lands as you get them, and just keep all that good counter spell and bounce and big beaters up in your hand.
Yeah.
Or if you choose dragons, spells your opponents cast that target you or a permanent you control cost two more. So,
another way to disincentivize your opponent from doing anything that targets you.
Exactly. And again, I mean, you know, that might not hurt all of your opponents all of the time, but, you know, if it's not going to do anything in the certain game, just choose cons and just start ripping cards.
Oh, baby.
And then you have just more ways to kind of slowing the game down. Blind Obedience, 1 and a white enchantment. It has Extort, which, okay.
Possibly relevant.
Sure. Whenever you play something that's white.
Slows your opponents down is why we're playing.
Oh, whenever you cast a spell. I didn't know that. I thought it had to be a white or black spell. So yeah, Extort. Whenever you cast a spell, you can pay white. And if you do, each opponent loses one life, and you gain that much. So, it'll keep you alive. But the reason you're playing it, artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So,
and on the same realm, there's a creature that does something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
He's called the Loxodon Gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 4-drop, 2 white-white, except he says artifacts, creatures, and lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah.
And that's just another great way, like, if they're planning out their turn and they're like, okay, like, yeah, he's taxing me and my, you know, my 5-drop's going to cost 7. I got 6 land, but okay, I got this. I got the 7th land in my hand. We can do this. And then you play your Gatekeeper and now, again, you bought yourself a whole nother turn because that land's going to come in tapped between, you know, just putting people behind.
Yeah.
Just putting yourself ahead.
Yeah.
Little by little.
And
until they can't catch up to you or you're just ready to win.
Absolutely. And not only are they not going to be able to play that 5-drop that costs 7 because their land comes in, they can now play their 4-drop that costs 6, but that 4-drop is going to come in tapped. So they're not even getting that value out of it.
Exactly. And this is why you really only need a few big guys, mm-hmm. is because at the end of the day, you keep buying yourself a turn here,
mm-hmm.
a turn there. And so all these times that you're putting your opponents behind back, half a turn, that's all turns then that you're getting to swing,
mm-hmm.
getting to swing. And eventually that will just lead to you winning the game.
Mm-hmm. So, these beaters, I think there's probably, I mean, just...
Bring on the beats.
There's probably just 3 or 4 main ones.
Yes, there's really only a few we have, because this is how it works. You're going to, your answer is your tax, and you're eventually going to draw into your beater,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going to win.
Mm-hmm. So, to start us off, we want some taxation beaters. Asperia, Supreme Judge, 2 white-white, blue-blue.
Hopefully, white-white, blue-blue if Arbiter's on the field.
True. It's very true.
A 4-drop Asperia seems good.
Yeah. So, you know, he's probably on the field. He probably ramped up and, you know, maybe ramped up into a turn 3 Grand Arbiter. Turn 4 Asperia. You know, she's just a 6-4 flying. Whenever someone attacks you or a Planeswalker you control, you may draw a card. That's all. You know. Giant flying monster that is netting you a ton of cards.
Yeah. I mean, would you want to swing at your opponent if you had to pay, say, 2 mana, 2 life, and then they were going to get to draw a card?
Absolutely
not. Seems like too many resources to be worth swinging at me.
Right. I would honestly probably just concede. But yeah.
And it's always relevant to note that you draw as they attack. So if you don't have an answer and they swing at you, it's always possible that you could draw into your answer and play it at instant speed before damage happens.
It's very true. Any sort of bounce effect or anything like that. Yeah.
So always make sure and draw your card and make sure you don't have something to do.
Mm-hmm. Similar to that, Drogskull Reaver, 5 white-blue. You know, not a 6/4, but it's a 3/5 flying. He has double strike, so it's kind of like he has 6 power. And he also has lifelink. Then he says, whenever you gain life, you draw a card.
Seems solid.
Yeah, so either he swings and they block, or he swings and they don't block, or he blocks. He'll deal first strike damage.
Gain some life, draw a card.
Gain some life. Assuming their creature is still alive, he'll deal 3 more life, and then you'll draw another card. Gain 3 life.
Lifelink with whenever you gain life, draw a card seems solid.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, more or less. I mean, there's even, you know, you're going to want a bunch of counterspells and stuff in this deck. You can play the counterspell, white-blue-blue counter-target spell, gain 4 life? Gain 3 life? I think so.
There's something like that.
Yeah.
The better one at white-blue-blue is render silent, counter-target spell, your opponent can't cast spells this turn.
That's very true.
They just stapled silence and counterspell together.
Yeah, but then you don't get to draw a card for gaining life.
Well.
Oh, darn.
missed my chance, I guess.
Alright. And then I think just probably the final beater that we want to talk about.
I have one more after this.
Okay. I'll grab this one then.
Okay. Are you sure?
I think I can
handle it. Are you sure? Can you handle it?
God damn it.
Can you?
Don't do this. You always do this.
Prove me wrong.
Sure. Madomai?
I think it's Metamai.
Oh, maybe I can't do this. Okay. Metamai the Ageless. 4 white-blue. 4/4 flying. So, okay. You're going to be spending 4 mana for it. Let's be serious.
let's get down to brass tacks.
Yeah. 4/4 flying. And then whenever he deals damage to a player, you take an extra turn.
Solid. Yeah. I want to swing with my beaters twice.
Yeah. Regretfully, he can't attack during extra turns.
Because that would be an infinite combo if he could.
Yeah. But you know what? Being able to take an extra turn every time, like
every other turn?
Yeah.
Every real turn, being able to take an extra turn still seems good.
Yeah, drawing all those cards, like swinging with your Drogskull Reaver, drawing all those cards.
And it's nice to know that if you have him on the field, you can essentially tap out, do whatever you need to do on your turn, swing, punch, get your extra turn, and on your extra turn, then you can just, you know, everything untaps, then you can kind of just pass and go back to being the control deck and be like, look at all my untapped mana. Like,
it's very true.
I got my counters. And that's awesome because that gives you a turn to do aggressive things and be like, okay, I'm going to swing with all my flying guys, get in a bunch of damage, take my extra turn, untap, maybe only swing with 1 or 2 of them, leave some back as blockers, leave up mana for counters. It's letting you successfully hedge your game plan into 2 modes. Like, okay, it's going to let you race even faster because instead of having to only swing with maybe 1 or 2 guy and leave the other one back as a blocker, that's just going to be extra damage every time.
Absolutely.
And it's just letting you play that game plan better. And the final card doesn't do anything fancy.
That's such a terrible way to go out.
No, it's fantastic. It's just Goliath Sphinx.
Okay.
And he's just a Goliath Sphinx. He's a 7-drop, 8/7. With flying. Yeah.
What a high note.
6 and a blue.
Oh, he's not even white. He can't even cost two less with Arbiter.
No. But he's got more power than any other creature we talked about.
That's fair.
That big old just eight just beats an 8/7.
That's fair.
I just like him. He's just a Goliath Sphinx.
Sure.
Seems fun.
Sure.
Seems fun.
I don't approve of...
Well, also, Esperia, Drogskull, Madome, all of these creatures are blue, because they have blue in their casting costs. So yeah. Another shout-out to the Breaching Leviathan.
Okay.
I think he's a 9-drop, 8 or 9-drop.
Ooh.
But he is a 9/9 himself.
Okay.
But when he enters the battlefield, you tap all non-blue creatures.
Okay.
And they do not untap on their controller's next untap phase.
Ooh, baby.
So, luckily, all the beaters we suggested are also blue, because they have blue in their casting cost. But the idea of dropping a giant 9/9 that is going to frost all my opponent's creatures is pretty solid.
Yeah.
So, just honorable mention if you want to windmill slam them in your deck.
There you go. Yeah, I mean... Really, if you feel like the deck isn't as aggressive as maybe it could be, I mean, just there's a lot of big blue flying guys. You know, there's a lot of angels in white. There's a lot of sphinxes in blue. Like,
there's Deep Sea Kraken.
Sure. There's Visitrix.
You can suspend him for 2 and a blue, and he has 6 or 7 time, maybe like 9 time counters. But he has the catch of whenever your opponent plays a spell, I believe.
Oh, you remove
one. You can remove a time counter. And he's just like a 6/6 unblockable creature.
Okay.
So relevant.
Yeah, sure. All right. See, now that's a better note to go out on. I like that. Not the Goliath Sphinx.
I like Goliath Sphinx.
Sure. Okay. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for us.
He fits pretty well into Kangi, I think. He might not be a bird, but he's a big old flyer.
I mean, birds only. Birds or die.
Whatever.
If not bird, then die.
Sure. That's the note you want to go out on?
No. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to listen. You can find future episodes on MTGCast and iTunes. We'll be sure to include a link to the actual RSS feed on iTunes. I know we've had a couple of listeners say that when they try to subscribe, they actually subscribe to everything on MTGCast. So we'll be sure to include a link that you can go to subscribe to just us, because we're the only ones that you should be listening to.
Booyah!
You know, if you want to subscribe or, you know, leave a comment on there, we would super appreciate it. You can also follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Or you could send us an email. All of those will be mtgjunkrares, our email being at Gmail. You know, if you want to talk to us about the cast, if you want to talk to us about anything, you know, modern, if you want to talk about some custom card design, I'm always up for that. You know, taxes, we'll talk about it, you know, we'll hash it out, whatever comes up, you know.
Yeah, sure.
All right. I think that'll do it for this week.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I've just realized.
Oh, that, here it comes. Here it comes, guys.
Hey, no.
No?
I think I've just realized that the best way to take over the world is just form the government.
Yeah.
And just tax everyone. And if anybody gets out of line, you just have one really big bomb to take care of them.
Britain should have had a really big bomb. And we never would have.
This is how Grand Arbiter does it. I'm going to take over this game with taxes and one really big thing to finish you off.
Gross.
I think I'm just going to become president.
Okay. I don't think you
That's
can.
That's what Grand Arbiter taught me.
I don't think you can.
I'm pretty sure I can. You... What's stopping me? I mean, not. I said I will. I'm going to become. I didn't say, like, Tyler, you know, 2016.
Sure.
I just said I think I'm going to become president.
Okay.
I just got to wait till I'm 35.
Okay.
I should probably get on whatever other prerequisites there are. I think I got to be like governor or some shit. Tyler for governor in 2017.
Sure.
Of whatever place I feel like being governor of.
Sure.
And then I'll become a senator.
Okay.
And then president.
All right, buddy.
You're not going to be my VP.
Oh, That's fine.
Just throw that. Unless you also want to go into politics and get some. I mean, I can't pick somebody who's got no VP credentials. What are your credentials, Jeff? Exactly. No, he has no credentials. No. Look what I'm dealing with. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week, guys.